Ladies and gentlemen, friends, and open-minded people wherever you live across the United States of America, Europe, and the world. This is David Duke, and this is Human Rights Radio on this Labor Day. That's what it is, isn't it? Dr. Patrick Slattery is with me. It is Labor Day, isn't it, Patrick?
It's Labor Day, and I'm a laborer. I do a lot of labor. And I'm not taking the day off because that's how much of a laborer I am.
Well, at least it's not the Sabbath, because we Jews, we couldn't work on the Sabbath. We can get the death penalty for that, you know, to pick up, even if you pick up sticks. They have some pretty hard laws on that. So we Jews, we got to be careful.
I'm a goy, and so I do work on the Sabbath.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Right. I got to remember. I'm
a goy. Work every day of the year.
Yep. Me too. I am a goy, though, frankly. Even if I have a given name, it is the King of Israel.
That was the best point, I think, that Alex Jones made during the Jonestown Massacre debate you had with him 10 years ago, was he said, "You're named after a Jewish king, but I'm named after a Greek conqueror." Ha! It's like, you had to concede the point.
Oh, that's true.
But that was... Alex Jones is that was his high point. I think everything else in that debate was a low point for him until he bailed out and got his I think he got his sound engineer to fill in for him towards the end.
Yeah, he did. Well, tell me what's up. Tell me what's on your mind. Let's talk about the BRICS, and we'll talk about India, Modi, and Russia, and China are really becoming bros now because of Trump's incompetence, and yep. It's got to the point where we, you know, it's like we don't even hold any hope out for Trump anymore. We just, but at the same time, Trump is in some ways unexpectedly and intentionally, he's really helping expose Jewish supremacy and the Jewish control of everything. He says, nothing to see, and the Epstein hoax, nothing to see about that, and don't worry if I go ahead and pardon Ghislaine Maxwell, the daughter of the Israeli spy, and thinking of that too, I'm just, you know, a couple weeks ago, well, last weekend, I watched about three or four hours of different things on CNN, on MSNBC, on other major networks, and they had lots of different people talking about what's coming up with the Epstein investigation and the Congress and so forth. And in three hours, and it was excruciating hours, but 3 hours, I didn't hear the word Israel one time. I didn't hear the word Jew one time. I didn't hear the word Mossad one time. But they're talking about the Epstein ring. Isn't that interesting? When the whole purpose of that ring, obviously, was to affect people, to get assets for Israel. Every single major player were Jews. They're all Zionists. And even the former, one of the former secretaries of the Jewish Intelligence Electorate, into our Intelligence Committee, Ari Menashe, said it was a Jewish blackmail ring, or whatever you want to call it, and that it was about controlling people and controlling the narrative and controlling people with what would be called the ultimate blackmail. But a blackmail, as you say quite a bit, it's a blackmail a lot of people willingly do who get involved in these organized criminal behaviors. They willingly do it, and they think they won't ever come out, but they willingly do it. They don't mind being compromised because they get certain benefits. One of the most interesting things I heard said was they said the other day that the being involved in the Epstein spy ring or these criminal conspiracies like this is like being a fantastic yacht. Being on a yacht.
Yes.
You know, if you want to get off the yacht, they'll put you off the yacht. You'll die. You'll drown. You know, that's the way it works.
But life is good on the yacht.
Yeah.
Right?
So you got a choice. You can stay on the yacht But if you want to get off the yacht, if you get off the yacht, you're out of here, man.
Yeah. I'm actually pretty enthusiastic about Donald Trump, because while my preference would have been for him to come in and do some good things, for him to come in and just be
betray us all the way up and down the line. I mean, even on immigration.
Yeah. Yeah, be Israel first, completely betray his people. Because he's already despised by half the country for bad reasons. But now you're getting because he's a caricature, because he got all these weird personality faults, he's easy to hate on. And now you've got his own MAGA people who are enraged. And they know why they're enraged. This is Israel first. And we could have had Vice President Chlamydia Harris become president, and she might have done pretty much the same things. Her people, well, I mean, the young people.
Maybe even worse. Who knows? Yeah.
Maybe even worse, but maybe worse, maybe not. But I don't think she would have created the same amount of noticing. The young people who have supported the Democratic Party, they are angry about Gaza, and that's good. And I'm with them, and I'm with Greta Thunberg. Good for her. But they're only inclined to take it so far. Right. Whereas the Trump people, in their noticing, they're taking it farther, because they're not just noticing Israel. They're noticing a Jewish power structure.
Yes, and Trump is... Yeah. Yes, Trump is very conscious.
Trump's going over the top on this stuff.
Trump has been, it was his intention, because he's being viewed today among even the MAGA people. Most of the MAGA young people now view him just as a total cuck, a total sellout. And, you know, just they look at him as a very vile person, by the way. I've listened to a couple of Nick Fuentes's programs. And he just tears Trump apart every time, along with anybody else that supports him, like Charlie Kirk and anybody else. But there's a lot of... What I can say is this. Trump has raised our consciousness, like you said, our awareness about Jewish power to a whole new degree.
Yeah. Because he lacks all subtlety. Perhaps a Chlamydia Harris administration would be more subtle. Maybe they would be trying to protect Jews, but they'd probably be more protect Jews from any criticism, but they'd probably be a lot more subtle about it. Whereas as Trump comes out, he gets Marco Rubio to make to subject all student visa applications to an AI social media search, not of anti-American attitudes, but of anti-Jewish attitudes specifically. Now he's talking. Now they're talking about revoking the citizenship of naturalized citizens who are critical, not of America, but of Israel. You know, you had naturalized citizens who were in all the Black Lives Matter stuff, all this stuff. That was never a problem, and it's still not a problem.
Right.
Criticize it, oppose the genocide, and we'll take away your citizenship. So there's no subtlety; it's just completely in your face. And if you're gonna have anti-white, pro-Jewish policies, it might as well be in a format that people understand and notice, rather than that are subtle and people don't understand what they're getting into.
It's like something you'd read in a dystopian novel, or even a comic book. I mean, it's
more a comic book.
Where they're going with this stuff is crazy. The idea of taking people who have rights to be America, right, who have legal papers for America, and then sending them to incarceration in third countries where they're not even from. halfway around the world. It's like an unimaginable thing. And you know what's on the table. They've even proposed that we send American citizens to different countries to serve out their sentences, where I guess they can be raped or whatever they want. I mean, it's just insane. I mean, it's beyond human belief. It's like we have scenarios coming at us like a freight train going 90 miles an hour that's coming right in our faces, that we have, destruction of our civil rights. Even Norman Finkelstein has said it pretty well when he talked about the fact that the power of these Jewish oligarchs is amazing. Here's these Jewish oligarchs. We've gone into this subject a while. Let's take this subject for a few minutes of Jewish control in academia. You know, if you control academia and you control the intellectuals and you control these think tanks, so to speak, of America, you control much of the policy of America. And we see that with neoconservatives. We see that with all these leftist universities. Not, I wouldn't call them leftist. They're just basically pro-Israel apparatus. And then they can get up there on national television and talk about how all these universities, which they totally control, because they have a few people there that are practicing free speech or sympathetic to Palestinians. Oh, my God, they say. Oh, my God. Jews are being persecuted at these universities. And then they literally take away millions, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars, because they got that much money that they can give hundreds of millions of dollars. So they like to use the philanthropy for their anti-humanity, maybe that's the right way to put it, for their pro-Jewish supremacism. And they literally have dictated, and they've caused even the firing of even black new heads, affirmative action hires, which is like the sacred cow of affirmative action, to serve, you know, the Jewish masters. And yet Jews have such a disproportionate power in universities. It's crazy the level of power they have. But they act like, oh, they're being persecuted in Jewish universities where they're 50% of the faculty and where they control so much of the institutions. But they just can't even allow freedom of speech, even to a limited degree, in these institutions.
Yeah. So Harvard University, I believe her name was Claudia Gay. And she was gay, and she was black, and she was female, but she was inadequately diligent in shutting down anti-genocide protests, and so she was axed, along with the heads of female, in all cases, heads of University of Pennsylvania and I believe MIT. So that's a lot. I've never been somebody who says worse is better, right? I'm not that kind of accelerationist. But I think with Trump, you kind of get the best of both worlds. You're getting a certain amount of acceleration, but what you're getting is obviousness. And that's what I like about the current situation, is it's obvious what's going on. It's just really, really difficult to dress this up as anything other than Jewish supremacy. And you're getting people like Norman Finkelstein using that word, Jewish supremacy. I think, did he get that from some Jewish scholar at an Ivy League school?
He got it from a genius physicist. And it takes a genius physicist to come up with a term. Incredibly insightful as a Jewish supremacist, because it's a term that really explains the problem in a very short way, in a very powerful way that seems to be obvious for everyone. And the guy that invented this Israeli physicist, was really brilliant.
Why didn't you tell me you were a physicist?
I have to keep my secret somewhat, you know.
But yeah, so I mean that's good. It's not as if everything from here on out is going to be smooth sailing because people are noticing. But noticing is a necessary condition. It's not sufficient to get us out of our troubles, and there's all sorts of dangers that abound. But the noticing is absolutely necessary. and it's happening, and in ways that, I don't know, seemed almost impossible a few years ago. And, during Trump's first term, I used to refer to him as not a so much a weapon, like a military weapon, but a military flair. He illuminated the battlefield. He was completely ineffective at getting any of his promises done. But he illuminated the battlefield. And I think even now, he's probably pretty ineffective even at getting maybe the promises he's making to his Jewish donors. He might wind up being ineffective at that in the long run. He might backfire and blow up in their faces, not for lack of trying, but for lack of competence. Because while he's got talents, I'm not just going to sit here and rag on him the whole time. He's got talents, but administration's not one of them. And he's got all this bluster, excessive self-confidence, and he's been speaking of himself now as the person who runs the world. Well, I think there are a bunch of people meeting right now in, was it Tianjin in China, for the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. I think there are a lot of people there who would scoff at the idea that Trump's running the world. But there is a
battle. And the people in China right now they're the ones that probably have the biggest chunk of the world population behind them.
They do.
And they've got the biggest economy of the world behind them, or the biggest economies. Mm-hmm. But then again, there's still a fight. I mean, the Jews are still, like Jewish senators such as Coleman, still call themselves masters of the universe. But also although there's a lot of awakening going on, there's also a lot of misinformation, even from people that come along with some pretty good information on our side about Gaza, about the nature of Zionism, about a lot of these policies that are going on. I saw Chris Hedges' show the other day on how that we're facing fascism. And it was about this scientist who I saw an interview with him the other day. I can't think of his name at this very moment. But anyway, I think he was at one of the major universities. And he's on there, and he's talking about white supremacy and how all these, it's white supremacy that's a danger in the world, and all this stuff. And Chris Hedges is just going along with him like a puppy dog. And yet this guy is a big pro-Jew. I mean, he's not out there demonstrating against the genocide in Gaza, but this professor he had on, he's like one of these anti-fascist professors at one of the Ivy League universities. I can't think of his name at this moment. Maybe you can think of his name. He was on the Chris Hedges show. I don't know if it's possible. I have not. For you.
Well, okay, I'll see. Do a little look right now. And you can continue.
It was recently. It was like about just a few short days ago. I just thought I could probably see it in my phone, but I got my phone there. Let me get that. Keep talking.
I'll take a look.
Keep talking.
Just, you want me to keep talking? You got people like Chris Hedges, and he's probably very sincere. He was a Middle East correspondent for the New York Times, so he spent time. Did he spend time in Lebanon in the 80s? Maybe he was covering the initial intifadas in the 90s and early 2000s, and so he's got
back. We'll try to get this found here.
Yeah, he's got a perspective on what's going on in the Middle East, probably a relatively accurate perspective of what's going on in the Middle East from being over there. Does he speak Arabic? I'm not sure. He may well speak some Arabic. And then he's also a Presbyterian minister, but and I don't know if that's where this tendency to want to self-blame, self as in his group, white people, because he is one of these people, he wants to speak truth to power, or he wants to think he's speaking truth to power, but he's actually speaking distortion to powerlessness, because the white people don't have the power. And what he's saying to the white people about their privilege and supremacy is wrong. I don't know if, you know, I have the feeling he's probably sincere, but probably, you know, just lacks a certain insight, and he's been too exposed to Chomskyite thinking. And and there's kind of maybe kind of like an adrenaline rush or a dopamine rush you get out of being, you know, what is it? Having righteous indignation. And having righteous indignation, maybe during the Bush administration, you know, you could be righteously indignant towards white people or something. Maybe it wasn't as obvious. It should have been as obvious with the Wolfowitzes and the Pearls and the Fifes and those people. But yeah, there's just this massive blind spot that he and a lot of other people have, where, and you know, the thing is, I came out of that that background, mm-hmm. but when I was exposed, and largely through you, to the you know, I already knew that Jews were powerful and ran a lot of things, but what I didn't realize, and I got through you, was that Jews were specifically hostile towards whites. I didn't understand that. I didn't see it, but you made it clear through your videos and then through our collaboration. And, you know, now I wonder why I didn't notice earlier, but, you know, there's this massive body of work out there to entrap people into this thinking about white supremacy. And the alternative body of work is small because it's been repressed. And it's hard to access because it's repressed. Your books, for instance, are taken off of Amazon. I think the message is getting across, and there are now means of getting the message across that were less available before. And you've got brave people, in many cases, people who have been influenced by you yourself, like Jake Shields or Dan Bolzerian. Who are bringing this message to a much wider audience. Did you find out the name of that professor?
I'm trying to find it now, and it's like that. I mean, when you got so many things rolling around in your head, then I look in the phone, and I've got so much stuff on my phone and so many things that I've seen. I'm looking, and I can't find it. But he's like really known for anti-fascist. He says he's against fascism. And I've seen him before, and he's always talking about how we have to have affirmative action, you know, against white people because, you know, it's ridiculous to let white people continue to control universities when the truth is, then, and what struck me, of course, is the facts that you and I are both aware of, that in terms of percentages of undergraduates and even graduate students that are allowed into the top programs of Harvard and Yale and Princeton and these other major Ivy League universities and power centers, right? The most depressed, the most discriminated against population in terms of proportion of the population, in terms of their abilities, in terms of their, you might say their merit, in terms of, like, for instance, National Merit Scholarships is a perfect example of that, which decides a lot of people that get scholarships and entrance to some of these major universities. In those instances, whites are so far underrepresented. The truth is that Chinese people, Chinese descent or Asian descent, are very underrepresented as well. But and you can talk about that, and you've had suits in court, successful suits by Asians about that. But as you've pointed out, and I pointed out, and Ron Unz has pointed out in his work, the amazing thing is that the discrimination against whites is three or four times magnitude greater. For instance, European Americans are still maybe 60-something% of the population, and they're about 70% of the highest performing students in National Merit Scholarships and other key ideas of what would allow you to go to the institutions of higher learning and be successful, be accepted in them, whether it be undergraduate or graduate. And the performance of Europeans in universities as well is, in terms of how their ranking is in the classes, is much higher among Europeans than almost any other group, including Jews, by the way. And we've shown that as well before. But the interesting thing is, so here's whites are, you know, whatever, there's about 70% of the top qualified students, and they're probably 20% of the undergraduates. And they're just as much misrepresented or underrepresented in terms of the graduate programs, the master's degree programs, and so forth. And Jews are, wow, they're just totally overrepresented. So here's this Jew anti-fascist with Chris Hedges talking about, oh, the danger of white supremacy and how blacks and others are being so discriminated against. And he's a Jew, part of that privilege. And there's no discussion of that at all. And the interesting thing is, and this is kind of what's fascinating. I mean, here we have a show. You and I have been doing a show for 10 years, more than 10 years, I think. And we've been talking about the issues that today, or that 10 years ago, were almost never talked about, even in social media, by anybody in the right, whether it be Republicans. It wasn't talked about by literally Democrats the way we're talking about it, the crimes of Israel, the crimes of the neoconservatives and the wars. Nobody spoke about it, and it's specific about the Zionist threat and the Zionist takeover of our government. And now we look at it, and it's just amazing to look at even social media and just to see how many people are talking about the Jewish takeover of campaign funding in this country, taking over the universities, limiting freedom of speech. And so what I've realized is that I'm a canary, you know, the canary in the mine. I've been talking about this for my entire, before I was even, you know, out of puberty. I've been talking about these issues. And it's like, I don't even exist. I've got books on it for years. Jewish Supremacism, My Awakening deals with this. The Secret Behind Communism deals with this. I've done thousands of talk shows. I've met the press 3 times talking about the Israeli control over our government and the financing of politics, how they've controlled the media in so many ways. And so it's really interesting in the fact that it's like, but I'm like an outlier. And yet it's people like you and I that have really brought this. And I think the fact is that my books have a much bigger reach, or have had a reach, and my other programs that I've done that's had a big part of the awareness of people. Because you don't have to hear somebody articulate like you or I on a radio program or a video interview with Phil Donahue. That was the biggest talk show in the country for years. I was on his show 4 or 5 times, right? Huge audiences, and I was talking about Jewish power in every one of those shows. And you don't have to hear that many times for it to make an impression of someone, no matter what age they are. And you don't have to, you know, once you kind of name the Jew, once you kind of realize this, it's sitting there kind of in the back of your mind, and then you see it in another video, another person starts talking about Jewish power, or Jewish financial power, or Jewish power in Google, or Jewish power in Facebook, or Jewish power in whatever, Wikipedia, Jewish power, and the relationship between Google and Israel and the Mossad, the Mossad spy ring, whether you talk about any of these things, it's like people kind of go, aha, I've heard this somewhere before. It's probably been from us, doctor, over the years. But it's interesting that we've been responsible for a lot of this, and yet, you know, but we can't talk about it because we were the ones that first really noticed these things and made it the major focus of our work. And we've planted the seeds, and those fruit trees, those watermelon seeds have grown up, and they're big, plump watermelons, and they're ripe and bursting.
I love watermelon. I love watermelons, Dr. Duke.
Me too.
You're making me hungry.
Okay. So anyway, it's kind of interesting that that you know, even though you know, there's no other person that did a book called Jewish Supremacism, you know, if you just look 4 or 5 years ago. Now my book was, actually the copyright on that particular book is 2003, but it was stuff that was in the book of my copyright of my awakening way back in 1997, 96. And I had articles about Jewish supremacism even before that time. And I used that term thousands of times on literally thousands of programs, believe it or not, over the years. For many, many years, I did a radio program or a video interview somewhere in the world almost every day. And some of them big, big, huge audiences. And those watermelon seeds have been planted, and you know those black pills or red pills or whatever you want to call them have grown up to big old fat watermelons, and people are seeing what we're talking about. But here's Chris Edges talking to this Jew, and the way that we describe it, and I think it's so important to understand this, for Jews to do what they've done in Israel, and what they've done in terms of the global. Well, the so-called neocons that took over the American policy and our State Department and brought us into all these wars. And these are wars that have gone on even since the First World War, maybe even before that to a degree. And Jews have brought us into these wars for Jewish objectives, for Jewish purposes. This came at great cost and great cost of lives. And this was the control and the influence that they exercised in terms of the money, like people like Bernard Baruch financing with Churchill, Blumenthal in the Churchill administration, who was the guy that was in the, who was the head of the Treasury in the Roosevelt administration?
Morgenthau.
And, you know, these people have had this control and influence for years. People don't even realize the President of the United States had no interest in the Polish-German fight whatsoever. And he said that he's against war and so forth. And yet Roosevelt, under the influence of these Jews around him, he was their cuck, just like Trump is their cuck. He literally contacted and had communication to the Polish head of government. And this is before 1939, before the war started. And he's contacting and writing letters to the President of the United States and the power of the United States involved in it, the economic and social and military power. And he's telling the head of Poland, don't make a deal with the Germans. Don't allow Germans to be reunited with their fellows, you know, in the city of Danzig, taken out of Polish control. So 6 million Germans, basically, were under the government because of the Versailles Treaty, because of the decisions of the Versailles decrees, they were taken away from their own countries, where they historically were there for centuries, and into another country that hated them, saw them as oppressors, and they were facing discrimination and hatred in that particular country. And here's Roosevelt, President of the United States, which is not in the interest of America, obviously, saying to the Polish president, listen, don't make a deal with Germany. Don't allow the Germans to have their self-determination. And if there's a war and those Germans attack you or there's a problem, don't you worry. America will come in and fight for you. We will get in there and we'll go to war. And we'll fight against those damn Nazis, you know, who dare to simply want their own German people who've been stolen from their own country, so to speak, and put under bondage in another country. We'll go do this, which was all a big lie, because what the Jews didn't want at that time was peace. They didn't want peace. They wanted war, no matter if they, even if they knew that a world war, would cause ultimately tens of millions of innocent lives, including millions of Poles who would certainly suffer, and Germans who would suffer, and Russians who would suffer, and the rest of the world. They didn't give a shit about that. In fact, they wanted to do anything, and their real issue wasn't about Polish sovereignty. It wasn't about that. I mean, these areas were German areas, right? And they were traditional. It wasn't about Poland. It was really about the fact that Hitler came to power. And in 1933, we had Jews around the world. In fact, we can show you headlines from Great Britain and other countries where newspapers were controlled and owned by Jews with big, giant headlines. Judea declares war on Germany. Jews of the world unite and demand that we must go to war against Germany, anti-Semitic Germany, and engage in this war. But of course, what are the ramifications of a world war simply because Hitler dared to say, you know, we want Germany to be ruled in the interest of Germans. We don't like the Weimar Republic, and we don't want to go, and we're not going to go communist, which they've been trying to make a communist revolution, which, you know, once Jews took over the Soviet Union, they had plans to take over all of Europe. And Winston Churchill, in fact, outlines that in 1920, the beginning of the 20s, after the Jewish takeover of Russia, and how Jews were leading the Bolshevik movement all over Europe. Well, Hitler stood up against that, and Germany stood up against that, this rising communist tide. And this global tide. And even Churchill himself in his own article talked about the cruel penetration of Trotsky's mind was that he saw Bolshevism as a way to have Jewish domination through Bolshevism of the whole world. That's what Churchill literally wrote in his own words in his article, Zionism versus Bolshevism, a struggle for the soul of the Jewish people. So this war was not about freedom in Poland, because how was it freedom in Poland? It was about freedom, you know, for the Germans, it was about the freedom of the Germans who lived there for centuries and who had their own churches, their own lands, their own governments. You know, Danzig was a 95% German city, that these people should have had the right to determine their own government, as America always preaches and so-called Democrats always preach. But that wasn't why we had a war. It was all, the reason we had a war was all a lie. The same way the reason we had an Iraq war was all a lie. The reason why we had a Ukraine war today is all a lie. And it's the same Jewish supremacist. And the reason why we're having this war in Gaza is not even a war. Even calling the Gaza war a war is ridiculous. It's not a war. When one side has got the nuclear weapons, one side's got massive fighter jets with that can drop 1,000-pound bombs on innocent people and devastate a $2.4 million person area, Gaza, just kill people at will, kill thousands, tens of thousands of men, women, and children. And by the way, killing men is just as important as killing women and children. Killing anybody is wrong. We always talk about how killing women and children is especially bad. Well, it is bad, especially bad to kill a child. Maybe it's the ultimate ethical transgression in terms of murder. But at the same time, it's like human life. And in every regard. And so then you have Chris Hedges gets on with this Jew who's telling us the problem is white supremacy. The reason why we have what's happened to Palestine happen was because of Jewish control of Great Britain that led to the Balfour Declaration and also led to the First World War, which was lined up with the Ottoman Empire on one side and the British on the other and the Russians on one side and the Germans on the other. And they knew that this war would do two things. One, the war would line up to where Germany probably would defeat Russia because Germans were far more advanced in their military and their military history, and they'd probably defeat Russia, which would embarrass the Tsar, make way for the Bolshevik Revolution. And because the same thing is true for the British in terms of the Ottoman Empire. And they knew if Britain was going to control the mandate for Palestine, the Jews had already plotted out. They already said openly, even David Lloyd George, the head of Britain, talked about this. They talked about how they brought America into the war with the Rothschilds. And in agreement with the Rothschilds, believe it or not, you talk about a conspiracy theory, but a conspiracy fact. And they made a deal with the Rothschilds. you know, we'll give you, you know, we'll let you have mass migration into Palestine. Of course, we'll protect the rights of the indigenous people, of course, that they will not be abrogated. But we're going to let Jews come in great numbers into Palestine as if you, quid pro quo, get America into the war. So you powerless Jews that don't have any real influence, and that's just some sort of Jewish anti-Semitic canard. If you powerless Jews, even though you had huge power in the stock market in the United States, huge power in banking in the United States, huge influence in politics, if you bring and you use your influence to get America into the First World War, you know, the head of Grayton writes about this in his own diaries. So, I mean, these are the kind of realities, and these are realities you and I have been talking about for a long, long time. And here's Chris Hedges talking with this Jew, and it's like he doesn't even realize that the overthrow of the government of the United States from a pro-American point of view, a non-Jewish controlled America, a European-American government, which was not only 90%, it was not 90%, but it was close to it. It was in the high 80s, percentage white people, that when we controlled the government for the interest of America, of course we wouldn't be supporting a Zionist state. Of course we wouldn't be supporting these different Jewish policies that we voted against. In fact, we literally created legislation to stop the massive open borders that Jews were presenting and promoting for America to change the demographic of America. And the changing of the demographic, as well as the weaponizing of minorities in America, is what gave Jews a divide and conquer strategy, which enabled them to get away with the crimes that committed against the Palestinians with the massive force of the United States and get world approval, because the United States used its power, especially with the end of the Second World War and the creation of the United Nations. It used the power of the United States to create this fake Jewish state where the smaller percentage of the population got bigger territory. They got away with mass murder. They got away with massive ethnic cleansing. They got away with genocide. They got away with torture prisons. And it's like because of the fact that the Jews took over the American government. But here is this Jewish anti-fascist, so to speak, telling us that, oh, the real problem, oh, my God, the real problem is those white supremacists. That's the end of my rant there for I'll pause and take a breath.
Well, you take a breath.
Go for it.
So the people at Hedges, they do have...
Let's talk about this. Whatever thing you want to comment about this, I want to hit this subject a little bit and your take on some of these things. Any part of this that you would like to use to illustrate these points, I would love to hear that.
Well, the people like Chris Hedges, the one thing you can say is... The people that they represent, the people, they're in currently is a bigger movement than ours. On the so-called left, you do have this large anti-Zionist feeling, people like Noam Chomsky. I've never met him. I've been very, very close. There were like a couple of people in line to talk to him, and I could have gotten in line and talked to him in about 5 minutes or so, 5 or 10 minutes, if I was willing to wait. And, you know, I should have, but I just thought, eh. And so I went on with my business. But to what extent he's sincere or self-deluded, or to what extent he's actually conniving, I can't say. But he has been... At the center of this narrative that on the one hand condemns the actions of Israel pretty harshly, but it takes the ultimate responsibility away from Jews and puts them on white people.
By the way, can I interrupt you for 1 second, just because you'll know who this is. With my cancer-ridden body, I actually remember now the person's name. This is the most recent interview that Chris Hedges did with Jason Stanley. And by the way, the Stanley is a very similar name to the head of AT&T, which is also Jewish today, by the way. And this guy is a big anti-fascist, supposedly. And I think it's one of the biggest universities, Ivy League universities, in the administration. And it's just amazing when you look at, you know, this lack of any sort. How Chris Hedges has done emotional and very passionate defense of the Palestinian people, the horrors that are being committed by these Jewish racists. And guess what? He's got a Jewish supremacist on the air with him, talking. The other reason all this is going on is because of white supremacy. It's not Jewish supremacy. Yeah. He's got a, it's just fascinating. It's shocking.
So on the one hand, you've got the message going out to a huge number of people. And so you had the under 35 or under 40 demographic in the United States, which skews to the left, significantly to the left, but it's become very anti-Israel. And so there's a lot of progress there, but then there's a certain amount of misdirection, and whether the misdirection, how much does it offset the spreading of the message? I don't know. I saw today, I guess when I first woke up, I was looking at a YouTube video I was not familiar with. There's some black guy who has a YouTube channel, and he was interviewing some Oriental person who was obviously in the Far East because of the time zone, who was talking about Israel, but then said, you have to remember, this isn't about Israel. This is about the American Empire. And I thought, oh God, here it comes again.
Oh, by the way, in this interview, I remember I saw so many different interviews this weekend. Sometimes on the weekend, I would just try to watch a lot of different things and just see what's going on in the world, you know, get truly woke, right? And I remember now specifically this interview. In fact, here's the video now. And here's a sample of the subjects at 9 o'clock. He says, anti-Semitic education. One of the biggest problems in academia is anti-Semitic education. You know? And the importance of academic freedom. And he sees academic freedom as stopping the discussion of what these same people, this supposedly anti-fascist Jew, says is the most biggest danger of all is racism, but it's white racism. It's not these Jewish ultra-racists who literally have a religion or have a culture that says somehow they're entitled, that God has told them they can rule the damn world, right? And they can commit massive genocide in Israel, but they're talking about how, in fact, this guy in the broadcast with Hedges was talking about how the Jews were facing discrimination in the colleges. The Jews were being discriminated against in appointments and so forth, when we know exactly who controls the universities right now in this country.
It's exactly the opposite.
Exactly the opposite. Yeah.
One thing, in the United States, the terms fascism and communism have just become nothing more than insults. And so the left-wing person, anything they don't like that they consider perhaps dictatorial or heavy-handed, they'll call fascism. And the right-wing person will use communism in the exact same way without any... I mean, I almost forgive people who don't know what fascism means, because fascist countries weren't around very long and really, for the most part, only existed in emergency situations. But communism became very established, and it had legal definitions in American legislation. It's centered around...
Go ahead.
Centered around the planned economy and state ownership of the means of production, which is something that when you hear people using, oh, this is nothing but communism, when they're talking about Black Lives Matter or something, they obviously don't know what they're talking about. It's a shame. But at any rate, I think we're at the end of the show. So
think we should start wearing a yellow ribbon, symbolizing that you and I are two incredibly important canaries in the political mine.
Yellow for the canary? Hey,
yeah.
If we're
canaries in the mine. Have been talking about this issue that, you know, everything that Candace Owens is talking about, everything that Tucker's talking about, everything that, you know, all these people are talking about, we were talking about 10 years ago.
So then how do people help your work?
Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. And thank you for sending some money in and going to the trouble to do that when I can't get a credit card processor. So I appreciate you people who can support this work. And I need it a little bit extra right now, too, because I'm definitely fighting this cancer. I'm planning on beating this cancer, but I certainly need your support to do so.
You got those copays and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
And expenses that aren't covered by insurance,
travel expenses. Yeah, because for one thing, I think the so-called standard of care is not necessarily the best care. We spend trillions of dollars, literally, on the radiation and chemotherapy and so forth. But there's lots of other ways to fight cancer that are not anywhere near as debilitating to the human body. But because they're not covered by insurance, whether the medications or the things, you know, we know, for instance, hyperbaric therapy. You can get hyperbaric therapy, like the same things that do atmospheres for people who are divers or whatever.
So what was
that's expensive to do that.
What was the post office box?
Box 188, Mandeville, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470.
Thank you
so much for being on with me, Doctor. I think we had a really good show, an interesting show on a different subject. We started talking about the BRICS, and we started talking about that. So there are some good things on the horizon, but the world is waking up, and the only way that Europeans are going to survive, if people are concerned about that, and I'm concerned about Europeans surviving. Obviously, my whole life's been about that, but at the same time, I recognize that European survival really depends on overthrowing the Jewish global power that they have. If we don't do that, we can't survive, and nobody else can. Love y'all, and I'll see you again tomorrow. Thank you, Doctor.